It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay. I would like to speak for a moment about man spreading.
Okay.
Are you familiar with this term?
Yes.
This idea that when men sit, they tend to sit with their legs spread fairly wide open, taking up a lot of space.
Well, and wider than most people seem to think they need
yes,
to.
Yes, yes.
Like, they don't have to sit
yes.
like that.
Because there is the argument that men need a little bit of space or they're going to squish their business. Mm-hmm. And that would be very uncomfortable. And there's something to that for a little bit of space. But men, and I find it myself, and right now I have my ankles crossed, but my legs are pretty wide. But it is not uncommon for me to sit somewhere, and I'm, like, really wide and taking up more room than I need to. Recently, I was sitting somewhere where this was not an issue. There was a lot of space, but there was some, and I was just thinking about it because I was sitting there not really doing anything. And so I tried, essentially, to close my legs some.
Get your knees closer
yes,
together.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I have discovered this is both much easier and much harder than I expected.
How so?
Well, first of all, it's much easier. Like, it doesn't... I'm nowhere near the point where I'm making any of my bits uncomfortable.
Oh, okay.
In there.
Sure.
Like, but holding it for more than 10, 15 seconds, it becomes very obvious that it engages muscles that I am not used to engaging for long periods of time.
Interesting.
Yes, I found this very interesting, especially because it also implies that if you did it regularly, eventually you would build up those muscles.
Presumably, yeah.
But it also implies that it's not something I can just tomorrow stop doing.
Mm.
The spread, as it were.
Yes.
Because it is very, it like I'm holding it. I don't even think it's been 10 seconds since I took this position. And it's already sort of the inner thigh, which is something that I actually work on in my workouts. So I'm a little surprised. But yeah, it's, I'm feeling tension and discomfort in a muscle that I'm not used to using. So I don't know what to do with that information. Usually if I feel like that there's too much room I'm taking up or whatever, I kind of angle. And that works okay. But, I mean, there's something we can learn from this. I don't know what it is, though. I'm going to leave it to you all to learn. Because I don't know, and I'm not willing to make the effort. So, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that uses the Luxortium method, which lends our podcasts an extra shine and gleam that you will not see in other podcasts. It's our proprietary process that makes it shinier in a special way.
And the microfiber towels.
Yeah, those two. I wasn't going to mention them, but yes, and the microfiber towels.
You know, we could probably get an endorsement deal from the place we buy our microfiber towels from. I mean, because we're so shiny.
We are very
People
shiny.
People tell us that all the time.
I've mentioned it to them. The shininess was in the pro column.
Yeah, right.
They had a really exhaustive list in the cons.
Oh.
Though.
Well, that's,
so
that's unfortunate.
Apparently they had thought it together already.
Okay, well.
And, I mean, at the bottom, I only glanced at the list, but it was much longer. And at the bottom was just the words "hell no," like underlined twice.
Well, it was worth it.
And
it was worth
a
shot, though.
Yeah, and I get it.
Sure,
I
sure.
Mean,
it's business.
Yeah,
it's nothing personal.
And I mean, yeah, but anyway, so yeah, we're actually legally not allowed to say where we get the microfiber towels. But
yeah, that's why I didn't mention.
Yeah, Anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 455, our ninth annual Thanksgiving episode. The only annual holiday episode that we have.
Yes. Because everything else has to be on a date, not a day of the week.
We had Halloween or on Thursday.
There's some shit
year.
That's on day of the weeks too, but those are on other days than Thursday.
But yes.
We did.
The only holiday that's always on Thursday, so that's our thing. Nine of them. This is our ninth one. Can you believe it?
I don't. I think you're lying.
No, I'm telling the truth. And next year will be our 10th one. That's going to be such a big deal. You know what happens next year? Sometime next year, and I don't know when exactly, so definitely by the end of the year, this will have happened. The longest I've ever lived on a particular piece of real estate in my life was 18 years, the first 18 years of my life when I lived on the farm. But I lived in two different houses.
Okay.
So that means the house I'm living in now, I've already lived in longer than I lived in either of the houses I grew up in.
All right.
But only by next year will I have lived on the piece of real estate I'm living on now as long as I lived on the farm. And so once 2020 is over, the house, the piece of property, you know, the town and the county, all of those things, I will have lived longer than any place else I've ever lived.
My goodness.
That's never happened before.
Realized recently, depending on how you determine my years in college in terms of residency, I have now lived longer in Iowa than I lived in Oregon.
Wow.
That one freaked me out a little bit.
But how many years before you've lived in this house longer than you lived in any other house?
Well, again, depends on how you count my college years. But if we assume 18 years in the first house, because I moved in there when I was approximately 2 months old.
So basically your whole childhood.
Yes. So we'll say 18 years there. And we got this house in June of 05.
Oh, so it's going to be a little while still.
Not that long.
Four years?
Yeah, I guess. Something like that.
Wow.
Feels old.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, to me
terrifying.
It is. Like, I was just thinking about this and realizing that, I mean, I've been in this area longer, like twice as long as I was back home, obviously. I've lived here for most of my life since I left home.
Because you are very old.
And in Coralville in particular, but I've lived lots of places in Coralville. And another thing is that where we live now... Mm-hmm. We were one of the first houses in that cul-de-sac.
I remember that.
We weren't the very first family to move in, but the families that moved in before us were only like weeks ahead of us, and now they're all gone. So we have lived in that cul-de-sac. It's going to be in 2022, it'll be 20 years that we've lived in the cul-de-sac, and probably nobody else knows that we've been there that long because all the other...
They all switch out.
Oh, all the time. Every
Although,
4 or 5
it
years.
It is funny. I mean, and it's less true nowadays because you don't know your neighbors like you used to, but I found at work, as long as you were there first, everybody assumes you've been there forever.
Yeah. Isn't that right?
I had somebody who, when I started, she started like 2 months later, and like a year down the road, she's like, well, I've only been here a year. And I'm like, yeah, and I've only been here a little bit more. She's like, what? And I was like, yeah, no, I was still new when you started. So now they, if they know you, they know that you're the old people on the block.
Well, it's before we lived in that house, and like I said, just weeks before a couple other families, it was a farm. There'd never been a development there. There'd never been houses there. So it's, yeah, that's kind of our place. But like I say, I don't think anybody knows it because everyone else who lives there has only been there for like 5 years and are going to move out, you know, as soon as they have a kid or something. Cause it's kind of a neighborhood with like starter houses and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, I've seen the place. I would hate to live there.
And we really had too many people living in it at the time. But now that we don't have any kids living with us, it's like the perfect place for old people to live, so we'll probably just stay there.
That's our thing here. There's no steps, and there's just the two of us.
Yeah, so it's like, that's probably where we're going to be for a long time. Probably not till, I mean, after we retire, we'll probably go back, like, to the farm.
East.
Maybe, yeah. West, actually.
I know, but people say back east. Nobody says back west. This brings up an interesting unrelated point that has been bugging me. So... a couple weeks ago. Was at Geek Girl Con. And they had a thing that they did several times during the con. And that, in fact, one person made a big deal of how they thought this was a very cool thing. That they were doing this. Because some other place had done it. Thought it was cool. Which is, they were acknowledging at a lot of events that the land they were on was originally a particular tribe's land.
Okay.
When we went to the Royal British Columbia Museum, they also had a thing at the front of the museum acknowledging that, like, this was the land of these particular tribes that this museum is now on.
Right.
And I think the one that was the one at GeekGirlCon maybe expressed a little gratitude or whatever. People were really excited about this. And I admit there is, I mean, it is a positive direction to acknowledge that this was First Nations land.
Sure.
It's a very small step and a very awkward one. In my opinion.
And a somewhat self-congratulatory one?
That's, and I hate to say this because I'm like, I had never encountered this before.
Yeah.
But I'm like, so you're just saying we know that America and the white people stole this from some natives. We even know roughly which natives.
Yeah.
Thank you and good night.
Yeah.
Now back to what we were doing.
Well, and it.
No. I mean, because immediately when I hear this, I'm like, cool. You're gonna give it back?
Well.
But I know the answer. But then why the fuck are you mentioning it?
It also.
There's not even an apology in it, which I feel like that should be in there. If you're gonna say it.
It also simplifies complex realities of how the land was used before we got here.
Yes.
I mean, it might be convenient for us to talk about ownership and however we talk about it.
Doesn't necessarily apply.
But there was a very complex. I mean, certainly for a lot of tribes, there was a sense of this is our land, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But some of these tribes, they, you know, when white people came and they just wanted to partition it up and buy it in little chunks, that just didn't. I mean, they understood the concept, but why would you do that?
Yeah.
And so it I don't know, it's a little weird to talk about it in such simplistic terms.
But it's weird to say, like, we should go back to where we don't mention it at all. No.
Well, no.
But, I don't know, it just made me feel really weird. I kept meaning to bring it up with Trish. I haven't done it yet. I should bring it up another time.
Well, see if it was just me or not. Another thing it oversimplifies is, and this is a particular thing that white people in the United States like to do is say, well, this part of the country was this tribe and this part of the country.
Yeah.
But that didn't really work like that all the time either, especially if they were semi-nomadic.
Or if they were forced to move.
Yeah, or whatever.
That has come up a few times. I came up again on this trip and it had come up with me talking with some other people about First Nation stuff. And I think I may have even talked about it on the podcast. So much of the history that we managed to hold on to and the culture we managed to hold on to tend to be West Coast tribes because they were the ones that were wiped out the latest, basically, and also got to see what was happening the whole other stretch along the way.
That's right.
And in some cases weren't West Coast tribes when they started and got pushed there. And so, like, you know a lot more about the tribes on the Oregon coast than you do about the tribes that were on the Massachusetts coast.
Yeah, there's some truth to that. And here in Iowa, there were tribes before they were removed that were here from further east.
Yeah.
And there were some conflicts between those tribes and the tribes that had been here before those tribes came from the east. And, of course, the Sioux had some territorial claims. So, you know, it was very complicated. And also, there's all kinds of questions as to what the population was like before diseases came in and wiped a whole bunch of people out. So the history of Native people of North America is pretty complex.
Yeah, and
you can kind of oversimplify it by saying, absolutely. Oh, well, this is so-and-so's land. The, I mean, that's not untrue necessarily, but it's also not a complete picture.
A very big thing that was happening at the Royal BC Museum and was very cool, and this one, that, like I said, I had said last episode, there were sort of weird gaps of thing. No, this was very cool. They're working very hard on talking about and recovering all the languages that were spoken, because the nature of the geography on the western coast of British Columbia was such that there were so many different languages spoken that were all quite different. And so when you even walk into that section of the museum, the first thing is they have all these pillars, and each pillar has a tribe on it and has like a greeting of some sort, and you push the button and you hear a live person say that greeting.
Oh, wow, that's nice.
And then I went, and there was this film watching about actually dealing with the fact that, like, Americans treated the First Nations pretty shitty. So did the Canadians, in different ways. And one of the bigger things with the Canadians was fairly late in history, they did this thing where they would take all the young people from First Nations and put them in schools.
Yeah.
Where they were not taught anything of their history and not allowed to speak their native language.
Yeah, on purpose.
Get in trouble. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the point of it.
Yes.
They did
and
that in the United States a little too.
Fucked them up bad. And I think it went on till like the 70s in Canada. But there's a lot of things in place that have put, and in some cases continue to put, obstacles in front of these native tribes trying to maintain their culture and specifically their language. And there was a lot of stuff there about that, and that was very interesting.
A lot of in the United States, a lot of the tribes on the East Coast, some of them sort of acclimated, you know, some of them fought with the Americans in the Revolutionary War. Of course, a lot of those tribes are the very ones who were thanked with the Trail of Tears and everything in the 1830s. But the United States, I mean, when you look at history and you're honest about it, I'm not a person that, you know, tends to think that the United States is like bad to its core or anything. But it's quite evident when you look at the history of Native people on this continent that the United States becoming the United States was like the worst thing to happen to them after the diseases.
Well, yeah, I mean,
because before that,
colonization was the worst thing to happen to every indigenous population.
It's true, but for a lot of Native people in North America, trade with Europeans actually worked out pretty good for a lot of them, especially when those European groups were competing with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And when the United States came along and was pushing everyone else out, and the Natives, aside from each other, and when it came to white people, they were only trading with one, well, that's when things really got bad. And, you know, of course, like you said, colonization in general was terrible. And, you know, it all started with Christopher Columbus, who, Columbus Day wasn't that long ago, obviously.
Yep.
And so there was a lot of talk about this. And
I believe the president wished us all a happy Columbus Day.
I was realizing that the thing about Columbus is, what he wanted to do was open up a trade route between Europe and India. So his plan was, if someone gave him money and he took this boat voyage, that it would open up this market, and from there on it'd be gravy.
Yeah.
But what happened was,
nobody wanted it was to get rich and famous.
He found this whole other place. And so the problem with that was, if he went back, he had to say, well, I didn't find India, but I found this other place with resources. But you have to develop those resources, right? You've got to extract them. You've got to build an infrastructure. So that meant he had to go back and ask for more money, which nobody wanted to give him in the first place. So his scheme was to do what had never quite been done before. What people had done before when they were colonizing an area, and this was including when they colonized European areas for the first time, was maybe they'd enslave some of those people and they'd make a little money off of that. But Columbus's idea was to use the free labor in the new place, but also use that free labor as a commodity to sell elsewhere to finance going back and forth and developing the infrastructure so you could extract these resources.
Yeah.
The Spanish crown didn't like that idea, thought that was cruel. Lots of people thought it was a terrible, inhumane idea at the time. So he doesn't have an excuse of being a man of his time or any of that nonsense.
No, bullshit.
But he found some other jerks who were willing to, who thought that was a brilliant idea. And that became the foundation for the whole colonial thing.
Yep.
And of course,
because it was very effective.
And then what happens after that, of course, is you're treating these people horribly and everybody knows it. And so you have to justify it somehow. And so that's when you start building justifications based on race. And so it becomes the foundation for systemic racism. And it all starts with this particular guy. And it amazes me that people are okay with that. Or that they think that, well, he was mostly a good guy or something. I mean, what he did was terrible.
Yeah, no, I think for the most part, people either don't know or don't believe that information. Because I was raised in the generation that started to say, why are we celebrating Columbus? But it was mostly just because we were like, all the shit we've been saying he did, he didn't do.
Yeah.
And it was only like...
Like discovering America or whatever.
It was only in like the last decade or so. And I even saw things like, here's what really happened. They went through it and it made him look insignificant. Yeah. And so why are we bothering? And it's only been maybe in a decade or so that it's like, no, here's all the stuff. He committed genocide, like, a lot.
Yeah, he kind of kicked it all off.
Yeah.
All that worst stuff that happened
and
in the colonial
age. And just really, like, on par with Hitler fucked up stuff.
It's pretty bad.
The piles of severed hands and, like, oh, my God, fucked up stuff. And if you go through the politics surrounding it and whatever, he was the most conniving motherfucker. It wasn't, like, there's none of this, yeah, he just genuinely believed these were horrible people, he could do whatever he wanted, or he thought of them as inhuman or whatever. No, everything he did was to try, and in fact, his late life is him just trying to come up with new scams.
Oh, yeah, well, he, in his letters, he described the native people in very positive and glowing terms. He didn't deny their humanity.
Yep.
He just thought...
Because I can make use of it
however
I want.
And he didn't come up with that himself. That's something that had been done, but there were a lot of people, even in his day, who thought that was a horrible, inhumane thing to do.
Yeah.
And he just thought, well, if I can get somebody to buy it, then... Because the thing was, you know... There were a lot of resources here, but as I said before, you have to develop those resources.
Yeah.
And that takes money. And so who's going to want to do that? And he could barely get people to pay for his trip over to begin with. And he thought he was going to go someplace that already had an infrastructure and it was just going to make the trade flow and he was going to make a lot of money. So he had to come up with a scheme. And so he came up with the most natural scheme at the time, as horrific as it was. What he should have done, what the moral thing to do would have been for him to say, okay, that's the scheme that presents itself, but that's horrific. I'm not going to do that. And he even had people tell him it was horrific, but he kept doing it anyway. And now we're at where we are today. I mean, so much can be traced clear back to that moment.
Yeah. And he's a big old dummy. He's the reasons that the West Indies are east of the East Indies. He's the reason we call chilies peppers, because he thought they tasted like black pepper. He's the reason for the fucking Indian thing, like...
He was not a good person.
He sucked on a variety, like he's a devil. Also, you totally wouldn't want to hang out with him. Also, he's a dumbass. It's such a low-hanging fruit. I'm trying not to compare him to the current president. But there's just so many parallels.
Well...
It's painful.
In terms of the general mindset of, I don't care about anyone else but myself, and I'm just going to do whatever is expedient for me, regardless of how it impacts other people.
I'm an idiot, but I refuse to believe it, so I'm just going to say shit, and it's going to forever be correct, whether I was right or not. I will ensure it.
But, you know, there's lots of people...
And I'm going to pretend like I invented and created and first thought of a bunch of shit that I didn't.
There's a lot of discovered. There's a lot of people in history that we don't really know anything about or celebrate. Like, you know, Amerigo Vespucci, for example, that America is supposedly named after. Hardly anybody knows anything about him. So that raises the question, why do we know so much about this guy? Because people like to think that we celebrate this person because he did a big thing and we remember it. But no, we pick and choose which historical figures we celebrate. We do not celebrate Amerigo Vespucci. We do not celebrate certain other people, but we celebrate this particular guy. And there's no reason to necessarily,
But and it's usually the politics at the time.
Yeah, some political reason is why we do.
I hate to bring this up to people, but there was a very, very big convention in which all the most influential people of the Holy Roman Church, at the time the only Christian church, got together and decided which of the books of the Bible
yep.
were actual gospel
yep.
and which were apocrypha.
They just made it up.
Yes. For all sorts of reasons, most of which we will never know about. Now, I don't even know what their justification was then, because I don't think anybody was dumb enough to say, yeah, we got in a room and God showed up and told us. Or even that the Pope, who has the direct line to God and is supposedly infallible, told us. No, it was a big old convention.
Well,
like, it was objectively a political endeavor.
No. I think the church has always been quite honest with the idea that a lot of what is taught and believed, and indeed the very content of the Bible, comes from church tradition. But church tradition is held as being, like, you know, holy and sacred and meaningful. And I don't think they've ever shied away from that idea that yeah, we made it up, but we can make it up because we are descended from Peter, who was the first prophet.
I've got the fact that whatever you shall make true on earth, I shall also make true in
exactly,
heaven.
That whole thing. But
that's okay, because then we got Protestantism, and there's a huge school of thought that Protestantism was not, in fact, one dude's attempt to try and make the Bible cooler in a way he thought was neat, but was, in fact, a secret underground process by which they saved the true gospel from the corrupt Roman Catholic Church.
Okay, that's some kind of theory.
That is a thing. That is a big thing, illustrated in a few different chick tracts,
but also in
a lot of fucked up denominations.
I do think that's the, for a lot of Protestant faiths, I mean, Martin Luther, eventually, you know, thought of the Catholic Church as being like the Antichrist and stuff.
And thought that people should be able to read their Bible themselves. The King James Bible, which is the one they name in this theory, was a different story. King James decided he was going to create his own translation of the Bible.
Yeah.
And it deviates in a lot of very weird, and in some cases not weird and very obvious, with given what we know of King James and the politics of the time, ways.
Well, yes, I mean that,
starting with the translation of the word that came to be known as witch, but whatever.
Well, yes. So there were a lot of Protestant denominations who completely vilified the Catholic Church, and there's some that do so still today. But, you know, that's...
Oh, no,
that's
I know a lot of self-professed Christians who say that Catholics aren't Christians. They're a different thing.
I've heard that before. From, like you say, self-professed Christians.
Anyway, this is such a good Thanksgiving episode just all around. We are nailing it.
Well, we're talking about Native people. That's an important thing to talk about.
We are covering the fact that it is Indigenous Peoples Heritage Month, and we are also covering that it is American History and Founding Fathers Month, thanks to our president, because, of course, those should go together for some reason. So I feel like, yeah, we're handling it super well.
I think Thanksgiving is a good time for people to acknowledge that the only reason the English got any kind of foothold in what would become the United States was because there were so many Native people who would help them. That's the only reason. They were all going to fail or on the verge of death or any number of things, and they found Native people who would help them, and that's the only way they could make it.
Suckers!
Well, it didn't have to be like that.
No, it absolutely didn't. Totally was.
But yes, it ended up being that way. That's true.
Suckers!
And it got worse after the United States became the United States. Completely worse.
Yep.
So, and that's very sad.
God bless us, everyone. The Indigenous Futurism panel I was at was talking about the fact that most futurist stuff out there, most sci-fi and all that, is always colonialism of some sort. It's always you go to a new planet and start a new colony there,
yeah,
or things
right.
like that. And that there are attempts to do, like, alternate history things of, like, what if colonialism didn't happen? Not just what if colonialism didn't happen in this particular culture? What if colonialism didn't happen? And I had never thought in those terms, and I'm like, whoa, that could be a very interesting story. And it's already caused me to put together one short story idea in my head that I think is really cool, but the more I think about it, I'm like, it's going to be complicated. It's definitely a short story format, but it's going to take some effort. It's not just a write it out
like
of
some research
kind of
and
thing.
Stuff.
Not even that, but just some story. It's going to be a long short story, and there's a lot of moving parts to it that I'm going to have to see about. So I think it's going to be a pretty big endeavor. But yeah, I think that's part of what I like. And I feel bad because I feel like that's cheating the whole, like it should be about seeing the non-dominant cultures or anything. But mostly I just like the variety. I'm like, these other futurisms seem different than the same tropes we've had in sci-fi and fantasy and stuff forever and ever. I like that.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's a difference. There's definitely a difference between colonialism and just...
colonization.
And just two cultures, like, meeting one another.
No, 100%. Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's like, surely by now, if population growth patterns had gone the way they'd went, even without colonialism, there'd be people moving all over the world. But you wouldn't have a history where some people were forced to move, or some people were wiped out, or some people were taken advantage of in some horrible, stupid way. And it's kind of hard to imagine. It's kind of hard to imagine what things would have been like, because the colonial age, from which is basically from Columbus on, is so destructive.
There's this image.
And so how can you even imagine what would be there if that hadn't happened?
There's this image in my head that when two peoples meet, or like when two peoples end up attempting to cohabit a spot, somebody wins and somebody loses.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be that way.
No, but it's ingrained in my head that way. Yeah. Like, either the people who show up assimilate, or worst case scenario, are driven out again, or the people who are there eventually are conquered in one form or another. And in my head, that's how it works. Those are the two things. And so obviously it doesn't have to be that way. But then my brain's like, what else could it be? And my brain's stuttering some, like, well, I mean,
Well, for me, it's not so hard to think of how else it could work. It's hard for me to reconstruct what it would look like if it worked that way instead. I mean, because
we haven't got a good example, or at least I don't know.
Well, maybe we do, maybe we don't. But like with specifically with North America, like it's hard to imagine, even if the people who came over were perfectly nice and weren't going to do anything terrible, it's hard to imagine them still not bringing smallpox. Right? Like, that seems like that still would have happened. So that's bad. And that's going to be bad right off the bat. And then a lot of the people coming over obviously felt like they were forced to come over. Mm-hmm. So again, even if you presume they're not going to be a whole bunch of jerks or do jerky things, or the jerk things they try aren't going to work, there's still going to be a lot of people.
Yep.
And couple that with the now much fewer people than there were before because of the disease. Mm-hmm. And it's hard.
Well, and we factor in apparently imagine. Sort of before the white people started coming over in any number, an unrelated disease had wiped out huge chunks of the North American population, apparently. I had heard that, like, the native population in North America was decimated shortly before the white man showed up on top of that.
Mm.
And so drastically reduced the numbers. But there are some very straightforward, significant points, if we're sticking with the North American colonization, at which the people coming in said, we get to take this stuff now, usually land. You can't have it. You have to go away and or die. And if we get we could get rid of those. Like, I mean, they're just straight up land rushes, relocations, manifest destiny. There's a lot of things that we could easily be like, yeah, that wouldn't be there.
That's true. And that would be nice.
And that would make big differences.
Sure.
You're right,
sure,
that it's not like it would be a utopia, well, if we didn't have colonialism.
Or that we wouldn't have a North American continent that didn't have a lot of white people on it.
Yes. And still have that. And potentially even still have major conflicts and stuff like that. It's, but there are things we can look at that we're like, well, there's some big chunks.
Oh yeah,
that sure, we could throw out of our new version of this.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've given thought to this because of the alternate history I'm writing with Constable Bluehawk, where my alternate history starts in 1832, but I considered alternate histories going further back. I even thought, what if one idea I had, which was probably stupid, but one idea I had was library or the really the whole museum complex of Alexandria remained intact rather than it being largely destroyed. A certain piece of ancient wisdom was not therefore lost,
yeah,
that allowed certain animal husbandry practices and treatment of disease to evolve differently. So that when
furries arise centuries earlier,
so that when we come to the continent, either we don't make people sick, or we have a way to help them not all die out. And so I had to go clear back to that to say, well, what if this happened and then this? So I have given it thought, but it's really, really hard to think of a way for North America specifically, because you kind of would have imagined that sick part doesn't happen because that's really terrible.
Well, but there's components, because there's fairly strong evidence. Like, we always talk about the primitive nature of the First Nations. It's fairly strong evidence that in certain fields, they outpaced the white man technologically. And one of them is in certain aspects of medical science.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
And so, I mean, there could be a version where the First Nations figure out how to cure it.
Oh, yeah.
With support.
That's true, that's true, that's true. Where since we're cooperating, we come up with an answer, and we're not competing.
Yes, because when a mystery illness starts taking you down, you can't necessarily turn to the people who are taking over
the whole place. That's right, that's right. That's a good point. I like that. I never thought of that one.
If you're not shitty people, you might also be like, you know, ever since we showed up, all the people who already live here seem to be dying.
Yeah, we better do something.
We should check this out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or even just a free exchange. I mean, hell. Because we've established so much of this stuff in older European times, hygiene was a disaster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So maybe just a free exchange of basic ideas between them could have resulted. Like, because this is the thing, we come in not thinking of them as primitive.
Yeah.
And then we can learn some shit from them that potentially clears up some of this
stuff.
Well,
and of course,
basic aspects of hygiene and communicable diseases, you know?
The notion of one group being more primitive than another is so dumb anyway.
It's primitive, like the term authentic, are ridiculous terms when talking about people.
I mean, they basically, people use the word primitive like it's an objective thing. Like it's not a word they're using in a total cultural context to deliberately marginalize another group of people, because that's all it is. There's no such thing, scientifically speaking, as primitive, or this group's more primitive. They're
now
different.
A cultural thing. Primitive could be discussed when talking about, like, mechanical devices, potentially.
I suppose,
but not
from, like,
people.
An engineering standpoint.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
Maybe.
That kind of thing.
Maybe.
Because complexity is a thing that you can measure. Complexity of a human being and a human civilization. I'm sorry, there are too many axes involved. That there are too many variables to lock down to be able to say this one is more complex than this one. And that's essentially, primitive essentially is a measure of complexity. And so it just doesn't work when applied to human beings.
No, not.
And
doesn't.
You're right. And there's a very.
Applied.
And when it's when it was applied to human beings, that's the place where it becomes a normative value also. Because even if you could identify it somehow, level of complexity, there's nothing inherent to that that says the less complex thing is worse.
Well, right.
Somehow.
Because what you usually get with things labeled primitive is if they don't have writing, they're more primitive than someone who does. Yeah. That's absurd. That doesn't make any sense.
And also, there's a bunch of stuff that they say they're more primitive because they don't have X, Y, and Z. They actually had X, Y, and Z. You just never bothered to check.
Or they didn't need X, Y, and Z.
Or they didn't need X, Y, and Z. But often they have that kind of shit. Or, yeah. Or they didn't have X, Y, or Z because they had A, B, and C, which allowed them to get D, E, and F, which you've never even fucking heard of.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just a way for people to not really see the group that they're marginalizing. It's the same with terms like barbarian or savage or...
And in the present day, it's the same with the concept of authentic. You get this a lot. This is the authentic version of the culture or whatever. This is not really... I had to study this one a whole bunch of... What's the authentic X of this culture? And it's like, well, at what point, from what perspective... And who's at, like, there's so many...
What place and time.
What does authentic mean? I mean, it's physical and real and alive and there. So, I mean, it is a thing that happened. You just saw it happen or whatever. Like, what does authentic mean? And again, it's this weird normative thing. It's like, it's not true. And you know, and we can extend it to as far as... In black communities, you'll get issue of not being black enough or that kind of thing, or what it means to be a real black man versus not, and things like that.
But it's all bullshit, and
it never comes up except when somebody wants to point out that one of the two arbitrary categories is worse than the other.
Well, and this is what I'm saying. The only time anyone cares about these labels and applying them is if the social structure of the population you're talking about is fairly hierarchical and very strict.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to have a large scale something that's sort of insisting that people divide themselves into these little places and categories and everything else. And the hierarchy means that everyone's jockeying for position to be wherever they are.
Nobody ever says, these people are far more primitive. What an elegant solution to civilization. At least not unironically.
No.
They'll use the word quaint instead.
Yeah, well, because the reason they're calling them primitive is to say they are below me.
Yes.
That's the whole point of it.
And they are either of less value or at best they are ignorant and need to be taught.
Yeah.
To be more like me. That specifically they need to be taught to be more like me.
Yeah. The higher up on the hierarchy you are, the more say you have in what the rules are. And that means the less someone has power over you.
Yeah.
So it's just a big power thing. It's a sociological thing that's been around since humans started. But it amazes me, still amazes me, how much we take things that are arbitrary and treat them like they're not.
It just takes time and energy. Because they've shown time and time again about this. If you say your political opinion louder, people are more inclined to believe it. If you repeat your opinion often, more often than an alternate opinion, people start believing it. It is some really stupid shit in human brains. But we fall for it. And all it takes is for somebody to say something crazy. It's why free speech gets problematic. And I am not opposed to free speech. I want to make that clear. But you can also harness that to say shit that is objectively untrue, but say it over and over enough and loud enough and in just the right way that you convince people it is, and then you take a generation, and then your whole society believes it is fact.
Well, I think it's a little more complicated than that.
It's a lot more complicated than that, but there are fundamental points there. You can convince people of things with energy and time. If you say it long enough, eventually more and more people believe it.
Well, I think more and more people are afraid not to act like they believe it. Because the more it seems like everybody believes it, it's that study that was it the guy named Ash? Where the conformity study, right, where you've got three people and two of them are shills. They're not actual subjects. And the third person is the real subject. And you have them look at these lines and say, which one's the longest? And you have the shills say, like, the second longest is actually the longest.
Yeah.
And you see how often that third person is going to cave and just say what these two people say. Now, when you talk to those people after the study, they will say, oh my gosh, I knew that was the longer one, but I just, you know, I didn't want to be the odd man out. So it's not that the person, suddenly their perception changed and they actually saw that as the longest one. They were afraid to be the one who was the odd man out.
Yeah, but when you scale that up,
yeah,
it no longer is just, I don't want to be the odd man out. It's, wow, maybe I'm not seeing it the way other people are seeing it.
There's that. That's true. But there's also just, I want to be on the winning team. And at that point, you don't even care what's true or false. You just want to be on the winning team.
It doesn't really matter which is the longest line. Exactly. I might as well go along.
Exactly.
But it can honestly change people's views, too. People can honestly start to believe stuff.
Well, a person
because all these other people that they know and respect believe them. And nobody else is agreeing with them. So maybe the problem is them.
Well, they also have to build what you're talking about in terms of them believing it. I think what they actually do is they have to build some kind of complex to protect, you know, their ego from acting like they believe something that on a deeper level they don't believe. And what tells me they actually on a deeper level don't believe it is how angry they'll get when you challenge it. If you challenge, you know, like, let's say they believe that the internet meme about eating spiders or whatever at night, and you tell them, no, that's not true, they're probably not going to get angry that you've challenged that belief. They'll probably just go, oh, wow, that's funny. That's funny that the internet made that or whatever. But when you challenge a belief and they get super angry, like right off the bat, to me, that's a giveaway that on a deeper level, they know it's baloney. And they're not really defending the truth of the thing. They're defending their defense mechanism that protects them from admitting that it's baloney.
I don't know. I'd go so far as to say that deep down.
So they'll fit in.
They know it's not true. I would go deep down, they know that they don't actually care if it's true.
Oh, that's possible too, yeah.
Because if you're challenging something and they get mad immediately, it might not be, I don't want you to find out it's not true. It's, I don't want to stop believing this.
Yeah.
No matter what it is.
Right.
But, and it's still...
That is probably more accurate.
It still has to have an acknowledgement in your subconscious that there's a possibility. Because if you are 100% convinced of something... It's really hard for somebody to get you mad about it because you're like, you can say whatever you want. It's true. And so if you're fighting that, there has to be a seed of doubt in there.
Well, exactly. Because
a desire not for the doubt to be false.
That's right.
But I don't think it has to go so far as to say, yeah, it's probably not true. It's just like, it's just the, if that's possible, that we can't let that happen.
Well,
therefore,
it's like people who, if you challenge their faith in God, for example,
yes,
and they freak right out, that speaks to exactly what you're saying. There is some doubt in there, like,
yes,
like they acknowledge
and a lot
that
of people will admit that, but you get really defensive because, and believe me, I know wherever I speak, if you believe in God, you are horrified and terrified by the idea that that's not true.
Possibly, yeah.
That's one of the worst beliefs to have undermined is the idea that I've got this God that takes care of everything, whatever, and I'm going to have this all. Oh, what? None of that's real? Fuck me.
Well, that's true.
Like, that's
I suppose
awful.
That's true, but I mean...
I spent years fighting with that.
There are a lot of people who believe in God, and if you challenge their belief, it doesn't bother them. I mean, they're fine with it, you know.
That's because they're fairly solid in their belief.
Exactly. But a person that has doubts and they don't want to admit they have a doubt or they don't want to face the doubt, they're going to freak
well,
out just
and
as
that's,
soon as you challenge
and that's where that faith.
Bit.
That's where that faith concept comes in. And I always like Penn and Teller used to have that show called Bullshit where they would debunk things. And they did one about the Bible. And they were like, this whole show is about us debunking the arguments of the facts and evidence in the Bible. Anything that comes up in this show or in the Bible, if you say you believe it due to your faith, we can't argue with you.
Yes.
You win because it's faith.
Yeah.
That's the point of faith. these people are trying to prove the Bible, and they are full of bullshit.
Well, and if they really do have faith in it, then there's nothing.
Then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's nothing Penn and Teller can say.
I used to try and look at these people who are like evidence from the Bible, and I was always like, this is terrible evidence. But as years went on, I also went, if you really believe it, you don't need
right.
to go find evidence.
So the point is what those.
And in fact, a lot of interpretations of Christian scripture are that you shouldn't find evidence. You have to have faith, and you have that faith has to be without proof.
Or it's not faith.
Exactly.
And so what you realize is the people who want to insist that there's proof that God exists or proof that the Bible says X, Y, or Z, that really what they're doing is they're trying to convince you that you're a dummy if you don't believe in these. So it's a controlling you
yes.
thing.
It's not a squash any doubts they might have.
That's true.
Because
they've got their own
it would be way more comfortable to believe in a higher power and not doubt it.
I guess.
It would be way more comfortable to. I hate.
But it's weird that.
I hate the fact that I have to sit around and go. I mean, unquestionably, we should have elected Hillary Clinton president. Unquestionably. Because it's Donald goddamn Trump. However,
well, if it's between those two, I suppose.
This is what I'm saying. However, I do have to acknowledge, as time has gone on, there were a lot of reasons not to elect Hillary Clinton as well. And I don't, used to make me mad. And it was because I didn't like dealing with the fact that, like, as shitty as it was and as a terribly wrong decision as it was, I have a slight more understanding of why some people voted for him. And I don't... to me, that's even just a tiny bit of legitimizing those people, and I don't want to do that. But I have to acknowledge that, like, that's...
Although it's not really legitimizing anybody or
no,
anything.
No,
just,
it's...
It's just acknowledging the nuance.
It is legitimizing them in that I can now say somebody might have voted for Trump not out of... a combination of sheer ignorance and horrible racism.
Okay, yes.
They might
true.
Have done it in for reasons that are less reprehensible. Still wrong, but less reprehensible
I guess that's
than
what
those
I mean.
Reasons.
The still wrong part, I mean, you're reserving the still wrong. I mean...
I'm not willing to go that far.
I know, but it's not really legitimizing them
no.
until you say, oh... That's perfectly reasonable because it's
yeah.
not. No vote for Trump was
no.
perfectly reasonable
but
in my opinion. I just can't defend it.
It's along the lines of me being able to say they're not necessarily all monsters.
Okay. Well,
and that's a step for me.
And that's good.
I'm humanizing them.
well, good.
But the thing is, I
we should be dehumanizing anybody.
I actively was defensive against that and got angry about that for a long time. And I still do, to a degree.
I recall that.
When people still try to convince me that they're not just human, but actually possibly some of them are decent humans, I still punch those people in the face.
Okay, well, I won't say
they're
that
so primitive is what it mostly
they're
comes
so
down
primitive.
To. They're incredibly primitive.
Come on.
And they're not authentic at all. They are maybe a little quaint, but that's about it.
The point is, things are far more complex than we often like to admit.
We all don't like to admit it. It's rough because we like to have opinions on things, and it's hard to hold strong opinions because right and wrong is never that straightforward.
Well, we make things complicated for ourselves by having these large-scale structures that we expect are somehow not going to be corrupt. Or are somehow not going to be tyrannical and coercive. But they are going to be those things. They can't help but be those things. And so they're going to disappoint us. They're going to make us angry. They're going to cause things to happen that we don't like.
I'm reading a book that has an AI in a, I guess, human body. I guess I'm not 100% sure on that either. But there's a point where somebody says, I didn't think you... things like you had emotions, and there's a line and it's internal narration, but they're like, of course we have emotions. It's just more efficient this way. If you don't have emotions, you have to spend excruciatingly tedious effort on inconsequential things by balancing out every aspect to try and balance the equations. using emotions is just simpler and faster. And it's true. There's big things, but there's also a lot of things where the answer is, I just like this better.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, this just feels right.
Yeah. Exactly. I spend a lot of time with people. I have a lot of anxiety, but decision anxiety is not one of my big ones. And I know a lot of people who do. And I frequently have to be like, they're like, what should I do between this? And I said, well, I think this is very low stakes. So if you pick either one, you will probably be fine.
Yeah, you're not going to, like, oh, darn it, I should have done the other
immediately
thing.
Immediately relax on this decision. Yeah. That being said, like, here's some other advice. But I'm like, the first thing to know is, it's this is one of those decisions that's not important enough that there's a wrong answer. Like, you're okay.
Yeah, that's funny.
And, well, I like the one that came up recently. Somebody I knew said, people should not underestimate the whole flip a coin model.
Oh, yeah.
Because here's the thing. People never want to do it. And the reason they don't want to do it is because they have a preference. Because otherwise you wouldn't. Because if you say to yourself, okay, if I flipped a coin and it came this, how's that? That's cool. What if I flipped it and it came the other one? That's cool. Then go ahead and flip it.
Yeah.
But if people don't want to flip a coin, it's usually because they're worried one or the other will show up and they'd rather have the other one. And I mean, I catch this myself. I genuinely think I don't have a preference. And somebody's like, well, then flip a coin. And I'm like, that doesn't feel right. And then I have to stop and be like, it doesn't feel right because if it came up that one, I would be disappointed. Therefore, I should do the other.
Why do you think people aren't immediately aware of their preferences? Is it just it's still unconscious and hasn't invaded their conscious mind yet?
Or? No, I think there's too many things at play. Well, the idea of unilateral preference, for starters, between two decisions, there's often pros and cons for each.
Sure.
There are a lot of external components of which one do I think I should be choosing. There's always the classic one, if anyone else is involved, if it's picking where we're eating, and you say, I don't care.
Yeah.
And you know, there's the game where people are like, I don't care. And they're like, well, what about this place? No, I don't. But like, if you and I are talking and we've literally narrowed it down to three and we've even talked about it and you're like, you know what? I don't really have a preference. You pick. I can do that. Part of my brain is like, but I feel like this would be more a William place. So I should but I would rather pick this place.
Yeah.
But to me, that seems like the least one he would like, though he said he doesn't care. And so that's a factor in there.
That's interesting.
And then there's just external things. The eating one is really useful. Well, I'm like, well, if we go here, I'll probably get this. If we go to there, I'll probably get this. I like this better, but this is better for me. This one's closer. This one, you know, money, like so many things, and it can just be confusing. And if you're like, you know what? And sometimes that's the thing, is like, I actually have a lot of preferences and I can't sort them. But if it's like, you know what, I don't really care, then you should totally be able to flip a coin or roll a dice or whatever else.
How does the suggestion to flip a coin cut through all that, do you think?
Because most of the time, if you tell people, just flip a coin, they don't want to.
It just does. It just does cut through it.
Well, no. Usually it doesn't until you elucidate this idea in my head that this person told me. The reason people don't want to do it is because they probably have some sort of preference, even if it's subconscious.
Okay.
Because if they really didn't, they'd flip a coin. And I put it in practice in my own head, where there were things that it was like, well, should I flip a coin? No, I don't want to. Why don't I want to? And sometimes I find, and every once in a while I'd be like, you know what? I don't know why I don't want to. Let's flip a coin. And I did, or did something similar. If it ever is getting stressful, honestly, I'll just, like, whatever pops into my head first, I'm going to pick that one, go. Trish and I, it's been funny. So Trish and I, as I think in any relationship, have a division of decision-making labor. There are things that she tends to decide and things I tend to decide based on circumstance, based on preference, based on significance. There's stuff she decides because I just generally don't care. Stuff I decide because she doesn't care. Things like that. We have a thing in place And I was talking with another couple recently, and one of the people in the couple gets annoyed because the other one doesn't decide many things. And they were very mad. They're like, they're always pushing me to decide, and I just don't like doing it. And I said, well, first of all, keep in mind, sometimes people do that because even if they are decisive and make the decisions, over time, it can start to weigh on you, and you also start to feel guilty that you're always the one getting your preference. Even if the other person doesn't like making decisions, you're like, come on, I want to, if you make the decision, I know it's your decision. Whereas the rest of the time, I keep having to second guess what you might also want.
Yeah.
I said, but beyond that, Trish and I have this thing, and I guess it's a code word because the phrasing is exactly the same every time. One of us says to the other, and we both do it in both directions, I need you to decide. And there is no follow-up conversation. The other person decides, whatever it is. And frequently it's just a stress thing or whatever. It's been a rough day. One of us has had to make a lot of decisions or whatever. And it's often like dumb shit where like, where are we going to sit in the movie theater, whatever. And sometimes we'll argue back and forth, or sometimes somebody has a preference, but that's always a thing. And it's not something we ever codified, but it's happened. Says the other, I need you to decide. There is nobody questions it or anything. They just decide. And it's very, it's handy. I like it. It's very good.
That does sound handy.
And we're not going to get to a question this time. And I'm thankful for that. Not because I want to be, but because I'm required to be because of this day.
It's Thanksgiving.
But we're out of choice. So be thankful there were no questions.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks for making us a 9-year tradition.
Yes.
For your Thanksgiving.
What is wrong with you people? I really hope you did play this in front of your family all around the campfire and stuff, because I just love that image. Nobody ever does it. Someday somebody's going to do it, and they're going to send me a tape of them all sitting around listening to the podcast. It's going to crack me up. But yeah, I hope you had a good day of that stuff. And we'll talk. Jesus Christ. I think we're doing a double next week, too.
Their next week, not our next
Yes.
week. Yes, a double.
Because of the one after again.
Yeah.
And yeah. Oh my God, I'm so sick of you.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.